Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Game design here on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. It's time for our January newsworthy clips. So for the next 3 days, I'm going to be here with my co-host, Rhonda, going over these current events-ish. I say ish because they're not really current events, but they're current events-like articles that are meant to introduce you to language and vocabulary that you wouldn't normally come across in a textbook. Today, we're doing a lesson called Why Everyone Wants a Game Designer. Now, this title, it is easily confused because the title is not Why Everyone Wants to Be a Game Designer. Instead, it's Why Everyone Wants a Game Designer. Rhonda, do you want a game designer?
Well, no, but this article focuses on the everyone being especially educators or in the field of education. So what can a game designer do to help with other fields? And I found this very interesting. What does it mean to design a game and how can that help us with other subject or topic areas?
Have you ever designed a game, Rhonda?
No, and I'm of a generation we didn't have video games. I know I always refer to my age and generation on the radio, but I want our listeners to know that there is more than one generation represented here. So no, I've never designed a game.
Even other games, Rhonda. Not all games are video games.
Well, this is true. I'm of the generation.
Have you ever created a board game or,
Oh, I see where you're going
like
with
that?
This. That's true. Games with strategies. I've never created one, but I really, really enjoy them.
I made a video game.
You did?
In grade 10. I was in grade 10, which I suppose in Taiwan would be high school grade 1. Yeah, that's how they would sort of score it here. But, in English, we would count from grade 1 up.
Yes.
So we wouldn't say high school grade 1 among ourselves, among native speakers. We would say grade 10. And so when I was in grade 10, I took a computer science course that involved programming. And I don't know if any of our listeners are familiar with this sort of antiquated programming, but I can't remember if I used the programming language BASIC or QBASIC, but either way, it was archaic introduction to programming kind of thing, and I had to make a game. And the game I made was called Mission Impossible.
You will be familiar with this.
Yeah, This is, there's all kinds of movies with Tom Cruise that are called Mission Impossible. There must have been one at the time that was out. And so I made a Mission Impossible game. And the way I developed the gameplay, because obviously graphics and things were very limited at the time, I did it like a choose your own adventure story. Are you familiar with choose your own adventure stories?
Yes, every choice you make leads to
yeah.
a different outcome from
yeah.
another choice you
so
could
like
have made.
Each chapter, like you read a chapter, and the chapter lays out a situation, and at the end of the chapter, you have to make a choice. And it'll say, like, if you choose to do this, turn to page 23. If you choose to do this, go to page 56. And then I've actually never mapped one of those books out, but they do lead to different adventures depending on what your choices are. And that's how the game worked. It's a very simple game. I don't think I got a very good score on it, very sadly. But that is the extent. What I did learn from that experience is that being a game designer is not as easy as you might think.
Sure. Well, it sounds like you mentioned graphics, and you've alluded to the fact that there has to be a narrative structure, which is one of the things we're going to talk about.
Even just coming up with an idea that is novel and interesting is a lot harder than you might think.
Well, we're going to learn here about why game designers are desirable.
In demand.
I suppose,
right?
What gifts do they have that can help other businesses, really, it's not like just entertainment.
Everyone wants to hire them. Mm-hmm. That's what we're kind of talking about.
That's right.
Yeah. So, well, you want to jump into our first reading? Let's do it. Listeners, we're going to do two readings today. If you have your Advanced magazine with you, I would encourage you to open it up and join us as we read the first part together now.
Newsworthy clips. Update your vocabulary with news clips from around the world. Why everyone wants a game designer. The demand for game designers has increased over the past year in industries outside traditional gaming. According to a Fast Company analysis, the most dramatic shift occurred in the education industry, where the share of game design job postings soared from 9.12% to 28.81%. Game designers are unique in the design world for their ability to create whimsy, engagement, and narrative progression. It's a formula that perhaps no company understands better than Duolingo, the gamified language learning app with 116 million monthly active users, 9.5 million paying subscribers, and $748 million in revenue in 2024. Unsurprisingly, when it comes to hiring, the company actively seeks out game designers. The design elements, the product design elements, the stickiness factor, the joyful and fun products, it's one of the reasons why we continue to tap into that talent, says Liz Tally King, the company's vice president of talent acquisition.
For game designers has increased over the past year in industries outside traditional gaming. So I don't know. I mean, this is a new article. This was not written by one of our staff. We have taken it under license, but it's an article from the year 2025, so it's fairly current. And what you'll notice, of course, if you are familiar with games, is that games have been a very big industry, like surprisingly big for a long time. So to say that game designers are in demand is not at all surprising, and that is really not the focus here. Instead, the focus is that game designers are in demand in industries outside gaming. So we have this information coming from this organization, Fast Company. Are you familiar with them?
Yes, because a lot of the articles we use are from this publication.
That's right. Fast Company. What kind of publication is it? Do you know?
Well, a lot of the articles are business-oriented.
Mm-hmm. It's a magazine, basically.
Yes.
It has an online presence.
I think it's an online magazine. I don't know if it's a paper magazine, but
it definitely used to have a paper version.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
But I wonder why it's called Fast Company. Company as in business?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like innovation and tech and design kind of oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they've done some analysis, some research, if you will, and what they've found is that the most dramatic shift, this is basically the increase in hiring of game designers, that's what they mean by the shift, the change, has been in the education industry, where the share of game design job postings soared from 9.12% to 28.81%. So it looks like that's basically a threefold increase in the number of game designers who are being hired into that industry. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, again, the percentage of postings is a lot higher than it used to be. We're going to read because the education industry involves students, young students, so the need to keep them engaged, keep them motivated to learn. So more and more in our tech world, students are using tech. So I find this fascinating that educators are realizing they need clever, creative ways to engage students. That's my understanding of why game designers are in demand in the education industry.
How do you think they came across this realization?
They, meaning the educators?
They, the education industry. Yeah.
Well, I think observing students' lifestyles and, of course, relying more on tech in the classroom and knowing that students really depend on tech in their lifestyles.
I have a theory.
Okay, tell me your theory.
I think it's all because of COVID.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I was teaching when COVID arrived, and there was a huge push to go to online teaching, of course, because people were afraid and they were at home. And what became immediately obvious was that online teaching was a disaster. It was an almost total disaster. Like, I really cannot think of a positive outcome from the online teaching. But that's kind of interesting because online education had been around since long before COVID. So the question was, like, what went wrong? And I know for me, I have done a number of online education things, but when I do them, I've been sort of an adult who's wanted to do a course. And that's not necessarily true for people who are enrolled in like elementary school, junior high school,
right,
high school.
Right.
And so there's sort of a gap between what basically the teaching model that we were using was like the same as the classroom, but everybody was online. And it fell apart because there wasn't like the social pressure to pay attention or, you know, whatever. So people would just turn off their cameras and disappear.
Sure.
And so effectively, you see that with the learning outcomes, like particularly in the United States, kids who were at key periods of development during COVID really learned nothing for a series of years and are way behind now. And so I think there's a push to find a way to engage people in alternative forms of learning. So that's what my guess
sure.
would be.
Sure. Well, and I think we should step back and say throughout human history, there's always been outside catastrophic events that have disrupted society. So COVID is our most recent worldwide example of social things like schools, mm-hmm. institutions being disrupted. But that's not necessarily unique in human history. Wars, bombed out places have always disrupted people's ability to gather and do something in a social situation. So I think one positive spin on this is out of change to social situations, human innovation takes over, right? I've been personally studying online education because I'm preparing an English course to teach online. I've had to study out, think through the advantages and disadvantages of in-person versus online. It's very easy to think of all the disadvantages to in-person learning. Excuse me, the disadvantages or the positives lost when you are not in person with the students. Mm-hmm. Here's where I'm going, Simon, with this article. This article is focusing on, we have this inevitable situation of the need to have online options for learning. COVID has taught us to be prepared.
I think it's just when you're using a classroom teaching model, you mm-hmm. know, which, let's be honest, like there's a lot of debate over whether or not we should be using like lecture. You know?
Sure.
Like actually,
sure.
most people who are teachers at this point would sort of say like, it's better not to mm-hmm. use lecture,
mm-hmm.
but they kind of use lecture because mm-hmm. of, I would say, institutional pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way schools are kind of set up
mm-hmm.
kind of makes it like, you know, the classic mistake mm-hmm. new teachers make is they spend 3 hours preparing a 1 hour lesson.
Right.
But they
have
to do 8 of those a day. So there isn't enough time, you know, for them to sort of create engagement. And so they end up falling into sort of a traditional lecture kind of pattern or whatever.
Sure.
The point is that really doesn't work when you take it online.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that these game designers bring, and they actually say it in the first sentence of the second paragraph here, they have this ability to create whimsy, engagement, and narrative progression.
So
what's whimsy
sure.
there?
Sure. Whimsy is a way of thinking or behaving that is childlike,
kind of light,
produces
fun.
Light, fun, mm-hmm. delight. We mm-hmm. more often say whimsical. We more often use the adjective whimsical. Whimsy is the noun form, that feeling that is evoked. Whimsical. So engagement around images that are whimsical and narrative progression. Gamers can create narrative progression. They can tell a story, and mm-hmm. the learning happens out of following that story, that narrative progression.
Yeah. So then they give us an example.
Mm-hmm.
The example is a very famous one, Duolingo, which of course is like a language learning company, but it's kind of they have an app that is gamified.
I use it to practice my Chinese.
Yeah, they have a word here, gamified, which basically means the learning is made to be game-like. It's not really a game, but it has game-like qualities about it. And it has 116 million monthly active users and 9.5 million paying subscribers and 748 million in revenue. All of those numbers, I think, are mainly just geared to tell us that Duolingo has been successful at gamifying learning. It says, unsurprisingly, when it comes to hiring, the company active seeks out game designers. So basically, we have a quote. You want to tell us what the quote says there? It comes from the vice president of talent acquisition. So this is the person, kind of the HR person who's in charge of finding the right staff.
She says the design elements, the product design elements, the stickiness factor. Mm-hmm. In other words, the ideas stick. People stay engaged. The joyful and fun products, it's one of the reasons why we continue to tap into that game designer talent. So the elements of design and the fact that people are really stuck to it, and it's fun.
Now, when we say stuck to it, basically in our specialized terms here, I'm actually just going to read it out.
Sure.
It says a quality that compels people to pay close, continuous attention to a product, concept, or idea. That's a little different than what we talk about when we usually say sticky.
Sticky, right? That's right.
So something that's sticky is, you know, it's like sugary. It's hard to get off.
It gets on your fingers.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yes. You know, it's that, like when you've touched wet candy.
I'd say she's using almost some slang here. This is a term that's come into the app world.
There's sort of this term we use within organizations where we talk about when an organization is sticky, it means like a lot of people will come in the door to try it out, but then they'll go straight through and out the exit.
I didn't know
that. So like they won't like it. So you want your application or your service or whatever to be sticky, meaning it keeps them using it. And they don't leave after they've tried it once.
Okay, I haven't heard that word in terms of an industry or business model. That's
interesting. So I think that's basically, I mention this because you'll hear this a lot when you talk about like organizations and businesses, but our specialized term description kind of doesn't give you a clear sense of that idea. But I think that's really what they're kind of implying here.
I like how she says we continue to tap into that talent. There's another phrase, tap into. We check it out. We look in that area for something. Let's tap into that.
Good. When you tap into something, I think of maple trees, for making maple syrup.
Mm-hmm, that's where it comes from?
When you tap something, it's like you hit it lightly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little piece of metal called a spigot that you tap into the tree. And then the sap, the juice from the tree, basically drips out the spigot into a bucket. So you've tapped the tree.
Mm. And it's sticky, by the way.
Well,
it's
very sticky. When you tap into it, it becomes a source of good things.
And she talks about
kind of come to you.
Sure, she's the vice president of talent acquisition. So
she's taking
out that talent, looking for it, and acquiring
out of the hiring pool of people who are available. Yeah. Okay, that brings us to our second reading. We'll go back to Campbell and have him help us out with that now.
Digital learning platform Stride also seeks out the expertise of this cohort. Who better to hire than a game designer who lives and breathes immersive worlds and can craft engaging content for all ages? Asks Nicoya McCoy, the company's chief learning officer. She says that game designers are particularly adept at keeping students engaged, since they understand how to design experiences that capture attention for long periods of time. They play a huge part in the brainstorming and design process, McCoy adds, and their creativity and problem-solving abilities are invaluable. Game designers will tell you that they don't just create games, they design experiences. Larissa May, founder of #HalfTheStory, a nonprofit focused on fostering digital wellness among youth, says that, ironically, the same game design principles that often keep users hooked can also play a pivotal role in helping young people develop healthy, boundary-establishing relationships with technology. The rising demand for game designers may be a strategic response to the evolving needs across the business landscape. Young people spend so much time gaming that they may expect the same level of interactivity and engagement in everything.
Okay. So, Campbell, thank you again. It tells us here that digital learning platform Stride, so this is another means of learning online, basically, also seeks out expertise of this cohort. Cohort? What's that?
Well, it's a group of people, first of all, me and my cohorts, we might say, a group of people with similarities, same age, social class, but it's usually a group that's being studied and a group that has one shared activity in common.
Yeah. I mean, I think the term comes from the Romans. I know the term was very commonly used in the Roman military.
Like they
had things called legions, which were groups of maybe up to about 5,000 men, and they were divided into cohorts and then subdivided into centuries. So a cohort was like a group of people who were organized into the group for sort of a shared purpose or common reason.
Yes, I think of the word mission there. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does sound. It is a military background to the term. So if you're describing a cohort of people, it is the idea they have a mission or a goal together.
Well, we use cohorts a lot when we're talking about like, so say for example, I have a company with 20,000 employees. So every year I bring in new employees in three waves, and then I send them for a standardized training program.
Uh-huh.
So the training program doesn't last a year. It's not like a degree or something. But they're in this training program together for like 1 month and then they graduate and then new group comes in. You know, they have like the same start date. They do the same training program together.
I have a question.
I would call one of those classes a cohort.
Would you say, how could our listeners use it? Would you say, for example, Simon, oh, hello, this is Rhonda. She's one of my cohorts. I don't know that we'd use it that way. It would make me sound like a criminal. No?
I wouldn't use it like that at all.
Okay.
I would use it for things like my graduating class from my department. So, for example, like a subgroup of a bigger group.
Okay.
So if I said, you know, I'm the class of 2012.
Okay.
But,
my cohorts.
You know, my cohort were, say, the biology majors who graduated in 2012. So here they're using it basically to describe game designers as part of a broader tech professionals kind of group, I think. So they're basically saying like, you know, if you're going to run an online learning program, who better to hire than a game designer? Because those people live and breathe immersive worlds and can craft engaging content for all ages. So when you live and breathe something, it means kind of it's your reason for living, your reason for doing everything. And then an immersive world is a world in which even if you're physically not in the world, your imagination and thoughts are so totally in that world that you're surrounded by it. It's basically the main thing you are doing. And so these people, basically, they're living and thinking about the games they're designing and the storylines for them all the time. She says that game designers are particularly adept. Adept means like skilled at or well-suited for keeping students engaged since they understand how to design experiences that capture attention for long periods of time. And the way they do that, of course, is with the story. That's an old teacher trick. You know, like if you think back to your own elementary school experience, you can't remember what your teacher taught you, but you can remember the story they told you.
Yes.
Right? That's one of the interesting features of human memory. So they play a huge part in the brainstorming and design process, and their creativity and problem-solving abilities are invaluable. So they sort of help to give a stickiness, I assume, to a product that is otherwise excellent but can't capture the attention.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you that game designers will tell you that they don't just create games, they design experiences. So that's kind of an interesting idea. This comes from the founder of a group called Half the Story, which is a nonprofit focused on fostering, digital wellness. So encouraging digital wellness among youth, What do we mean by digital wellness?
Well, right. Health, being using digital products in a way that are healthy for your mind, your overall well-being, which of course is a big concern in our world today. Are young people getting too addicted, or are they using their digital products in a way that helps them? And there's a good word here. Ironically, the same game design principles that keep users addicted, hooked, the irony or the opposite of what you'd expect is that these game designs play a pivotal, pivotal role in
a key or central
part. What turns on, what it turns on, the pivot, a pivotal role in helping young people develop healthy relationships with technology. So the same part of design that keeps them addicted actually can be healthy for their learning. That's why it's ironic, she says. Two opposite things that you wouldn't expect to go together, but they do.
Mm. It tells us as it continues on, the rising demand for game designers may be a strategic response to the evolving needs across the business landscape. So this may be basically a response by businesses to the fact that young people spend a great deal of time online gaming, and that's because they enjoy the experience. And if you can't give them a similarly enjoyable experience, they're not going to use your product in the same way they use the games. So that's the incentive. And that, listeners, brings us to the end of our first newsworthy clip lesson. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow as we have a look at tattoos. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.